A new proposal by the Department of Education would limit states from regulating companies that collect student loan debt. It would be a victory for debt collectors who are busy as ever. Federal student loan debt has now reached nearly $1.4 trillion, more than double what it was a decade ago. And at the start of this year, 11% of that debt was delinquent, meaning no payment had been made on it in more than 90 days. Joining us now is Susan Donarski, a professor of public policy, education, and economics at the University of Michigan. Welcome to Here and Now.
Thanks so much for having me.
And would you describe what we're looking at with student loans as a crisis right now? Is that the right word?
I would say that for the vast majority of college students and borrowers, there's not a crisis. The loans are manageable. For a minority, a substantial minority, there is a crisis. And my concern is that we make sure we match any solutions that we create to those who are actually in crisis and not the majority who are not.
And tell us about the reasons for that crisis for those people. What's going wrong?
The default rates are quite high among those who have gone to for-profit colleges, who went to community colleges, who dropped out of college and have fairly low balances, but they also have very low earnings. So in our country, we have a pretty thin safety net, and you can leave college with small debt. Typical debt is less than $5,000. But if you don't have much in the way of earnings, that can quickly snowball into an unmanageable amount once late fees start rolling in. So students who are actually graduating with a BA who are borrowing around $30,000, they're actually paying back at a pretty good rate, as are graduate students.
What kind of rate? How long does it take somebody like that to pay off their debt?
Well, the standard repayment period is 10 years. Mm-hmm. But with forbearance, with people taking time out for unemployment or to go to school longer, it takes a little bit longer than that. In other countries, by the way, the standard length of repayment is far longer than it is in the U.S., and therefore it's considerably more forgiving. So in other countries, students are given 25, 30 years to pay off their loans, and therefore they pay much less per month, which puts a lot less pressure on their finances when they're right out of college, when their earnings are most unstable and lowest.
Why don't we have that situation in this country?
I don't know. And I've been trying to persuade lawmakers to make a shift here. And I think there is some thinking that we should have a shift. A principle of financial economics is that the period over which you pay for an asset should match the period during which the asset has a useful life. So for a house, we don't pay for a house in 10 years. We pay for it over 25, 30 years. A car, well, that's more like 5 years. Education pays off over your entire lifetime. So it makes sense that you would be able to smooth the payments over a longer period. And I think, you know, it's just by accident, we ended up in a place where we were paying them over 10 years, and now that's just become unsustainable.
One of the things that's a little bit surprising, though, about the problem that we're facing now is that the unemployment rate is very low. Unlike it was, let's say, 8 years ago, it's very low. People are able to get jobs for the most part. Why haven't student loan delinquencies and defaults come down like other kinds of borrowing that we do?
Honestly, I think we have a failure of servicing. You know, while all of the loans pretty much that are put out now are federal loans, we rely on private banks to do the collecting. And the servicing of the loans has been highly variable. There are cases in which borrowers are never even contacted before they go into default. So fixing the servicing seems to be an important step in the road to improving student loans.
For people who do not have any student loans, does this matter for them to have this huge outstanding amount of debt?
I don't think it is a major threat to the economy, if that's the question.
Right.
So sometimes student loans have been compared to mortgages and to the housing crisis. I don't think we're looking at a bubble where there's going to be some meltdown in the market for college-educated labor. I think that for the people who are going into default, it's a hard hit. I mean, when you go into default on a student loan, your credit rating takes a hit. That means it's more expensive or perhaps impossible to borrow to get a car, to get to work. There are employers that will do a credit check before they'll hire and won't hire somebody with bad credit. There are landlords that won't rent to somebody who has bad credit. And then there's those phone calls that start coming and the psychological pressure of being harassed about your payments. So you know, I don't want to minimize the financial impact, but I do want to point out the sort of psychological impact on people's real lives when defaults occur.
One of the things you haven't talked about is just the extremely high cost of going to college. I was looking at that there's a school now in Connecticut where people have to pay $70,000 plus every year for the full package of going to school. Is that contributing in a big way to the student debt crisis?
The increase in tuitions at public institutions, I would say, is contributing to the increase in debt, as is the rise in for-profit institutions. The typical student goes to a public school. 80% of undergraduates go to public schools. A minority go to for-profit schools, and for-profits charge fairly high tuitions, and it is where a lot of the defaults are concentrated. For-profit schools attract students who traditionally had gone to community colleges, low-income, older students, first-generation students. As those community colleges have been underfunded over the years, students have been drawn towards for-profits and ended up with fairly high debts as a result. But the folks who go to Harvard, who go to Yale, who go to even University of Michigan, they're repaying at very high rates. Their default rates are in the single digits. So they're not where the problem is, in part because it tends to be fairly wealthy students who go to that schools. Mm-hmm. And if they're not wealthy, many of those schools provide fairly generous scholarships that actually make those schools cheaper than going to, say, the local for-profit. This is a case, I think, where the headlines about the highest tuitions don't match up with where the problems actually exist in terms of student loan defaults.
The Trump administration is looking at changing a program known as income-driven repayment. First of all, how does that work right now?
There's a tassel of income-based repayment programs right now. I think there's five or six. But the basic idea is that the payments you make for your loan are set as a proportion of your earnings. So instead of there just being a flat payment that's due every month, you instead pay as a percentage of your earnings. And this is a model that's been followed successfully in Australia, in England. It matters how you set it up. I mean, is it a reasonable percentage? In those countries, for example, a fairly generous set-aside in your income isn't used for payments. So like once you get above about $50,000 in Australia, that's when you start paying, for example. Because the payment flexes with your income, that means if your income drops because your hours get cut, you lose your job, automatically you stop paying. Hmm. So there basically isn't a concept of default because
you can always pay something.
Or pay nothing because your earnings are low enough. But, you know, the it's set up such that it's understood. That's the rule. You're not in default because the contract was. If your earnings were too low, you weren't going to be paying at all.
When does it make sense to forgive student debt?
I mean, there's no correct economic answer to that. That's a values question for people to hash out. In some countries, it's after 25 years. In many of the income-based repayment programs, it's after 25 or 30 years. In Australia, it's never actually forgiven. You know, but that said, if your earnings are low enough, you're never paying. So if you have a lifetime of low earnings, you will just never pay the loan. And when you stop working, it's forgiven at that point. But if you're somebody who has a slow start but then eventually starts making a lot of money in your 40s or 50s, the understanding, the social compact in Australia is that at that point you would start paying.
Do you think that the Trump administration is taking this issue seriously and has come up with ideas that may actually help deal with student debt?
I don't see, honestly, any new ideas in the proposals. There's been some fiddling with the percentages and the number of years. But, you know, what I would like to see, what many other analysts would like to see, is a more serious overhaul of the repayment system. You know, right now we have a number of income-based repayment programs. And if everyone who needed it were enrolled in them, we'd be fine. We wouldn't have any defaults right now. The problems that we have are getting people into these programs and keeping them in them. And that is about day-to-day management and design of the repayment system, setting up a humane, flexible, well-organized bureaucracy that's going to run this well. And I don't see any attention to that matter in the current proposals.
That's Susan Donarski, who's a professor of public policy, education, and economics at the University of Michigan. Susan, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.